League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Packers fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood here at Lambeau Field, where guys, the feeling walking out today was a lot different than it was 2 weeks ago around this time. Packers lose 34-20 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It could have been worse. White slid down right there at the end when he had a chance to score another touchdown. So it's all almost like it was... I'm doing the math in my head. 41-20. But instead, they walk out with 34-20. They now drop to 6-8. Still mathematically in playoff contention, but things are much more difficult now. There are different things to talk about than in this game, but there's one overarching thing that we're all going to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
Spoon, you were in the press conference with Matt LaFleur. He was asked if he would be willing to make an in-season coordinator change. He kind of effaced the question and brushed it off.
Coaching change, I think he was asked. Yeah, it was kind of not direct, but, you know.
He knew what was
Yeah, he knew what was being asked, and he was ready for it.
That question comes up because Joe Barry's defense, you know, we talk about it at times and have nitpicked it to death justifiably over lots of different games. But this one in particular, for the first time in Lambeau Field history, a quarterback has left with a perfect passer rating, an opposing quarterback left with a perfect passer rating, because Baker Mayfield finished with a rating of 158.3. He hovered around 155 for most of the game, too. He had 22 of 28 for 381, five sacks, but only one of those that turned into a fumble, and then four touchdowns. Spoon, what do you make of Matt LaFleur's answer, non-answer about a in-season coaching change, and the next question is, should there be one?
Well, let's first of all, it's sort of like asking a coach, do you think you're going to get fired? You know, nobody's going to say anything. Oh yeah, I'm looking at two options, either firing him or extending him, you know.
Which is fitting, because Joe Barry's always said there's 50% chance on defense you can have a run play or a pass play.
Yeah. No, but he's not going to survive. I don't know when it'll happen, but, you know, Matt LaFleur knows he can't go on like that. He just can't. And it's his fault to begin with. He's the one who hired him. He's the one who doubled down and brought him back last year or this year. You know, he has to rectify it. And the reason it's so critical is that, you know, the week after Jordan Love and the offense kind of laid an egg, they actually came back and played okay. Jordan Love played pretty well for the most part. You know, that's a game they still could have won. Mm-hmm. They were down 27-20. They get a stop there. They got a shot. But, you know, should he do it tomorrow morning or this morning or wherever, whatever time slot we're in right now?
It's 7:18 Central Time.
Okay,
what if
so
it's already done.
It could be. You know, in my opinion, I would just do it now. But it doesn't have to be done now. I mean, what difference does it make? They're not going to the playoffs. They got a 31% chance of going to the playoffs.
An athletic director I covered for a long time always put it this way when he would make in-season firings. What must be done eventually must be done immediately.
Here's one argument for being done now. They're playing the Panthers and Bryce Young this week. So I'm with you. It looks really outside looking in playoff-wise. But if you want any hope left for this season, maybe a resurgence, heck of a week to have, okay, fire the coordinator, the new guy's in, it's a new defense, we're going forward, and then have a great performance in Carolina.
The question is who?
Yeah, like who, that is a question.
They don't have a single guy who's called a play in his life. And, you know, as LaFleur could call plays on both sides of the ball, I suppose. But
the only one I can think of, and I don't know why I'm thinking of him, maybe just he's always impressed me when he's come in to speak, is Ryan Downard.
Oh, he's pretty young. Yeah. I don't think
of it
he's
this way. When
I think
it comes
that's
to
part
who.
Of the energy part of it.
Jerry Montgomery's got a lot of tenure here. He'd be an option. Well, he's also the run defense coordinator. Greg Jones?
Williams.
Greg Williams. Cut that out. Greg Williams. He's the pass defense coordinator. Until today, pass defense looked pretty good. But that pass defense today, in a game that Baker Mayfield was sacked 5 times, which, oh, by the way, his 2 previous December trips to Lambeau Field, he's been sacked 5 times, is identical. He was a 57 passer rating 2 years ago. He was a 67 last season. He was perfect today. And while I didn't know the stat that this was the first perfect passer rating in Lambeau Field history, once upon a time, Baker Mayfield was the number one overall draft pick another lifetime ago. He's got ran out of town in Cleveland. He's bounced around from Carolina to Los Angeles to now Tampa Bay. This was his 86th career game, the first time that former number one overall draft pick has ever had a perfect passer rating in the NFL. And they made it so easy for him. So you really want your pass game coordinator to be the defensive coordinator now? Those are your two best options, and they're not the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I don't know what Olivadotti's been around a long time. I'd have to go through their personal histories, see if they've been defensive coordinator somewhere in college. But that's the biggest thing. But here's to me why you would do it is like. You do not want, like, a Brandon Staley game to come up next week or the week after that where your defense just doesn't show up and you know, they know that everything, this is done, and you lose 63-24 or something like that. I mean, the players will quit, you know. I mean, it's not a knock on the players themselves, but if they just feel like they're not being put in a position like today, Matt LaFleur does not want that to happen. Not when he's got this Jordan Love thing to continue growing, you know? So that would be my reasoning, you know, and then you put in a guy and I don't know who it would be. This is why he should have hired a defensive consultant. You know, like teams do when you go into a rough year or after you've had a rough year.
Defensive consultant Brandon Staley.
Oh, God. Yeah, no.
Isn't that the same people architect of the same defense?
People, yeah. Well, people were saying that in the block. I'm like, are you nuts?
It's the exact same defense.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, Robert Saleh is one thing, but that's not going to happen. You know, the Eagles this week pretty much fired they sidelined their defensive coordinator and they promoted Matt Patricia to be their defense, 3 weeks of season to go. So they had someone ready in case their season went down, and LaFleur should have had someone too. Another mistake.
Has Matt Patricia been every coordinator you can be in football?
I don't know.
I think
he's been bad in one of them.
Yeah. Ryan, sometimes when coaches get fired, especially in the middle of the season, it feels almost like a scapegoat situation. Is this a scapegoat situation or is this necessary?
No, not at this point. Let's take a little backtrack to see how we got here. A month ago, I said Joe Barry is not – it was 2 weeks ago. Joe Barry is not on the hot seat for Matt LaFleur. And at that time, he wasn't. 2 weeks ago, he wasn't. And what we know about Matt LaFleur is that he does not want to fire – his defensive coordinator. We know that because he had every reason to last year, and he didn't do it. So we know that he doesn't want to fire his defensive coordinator. But at this point, Joe Barry has given absolutely zero reason not to be. This was a meltdown. And you talked about how players want to feel like they're in the right position, Spoon. These players didn't feel like they're in the right position. The two things you heard most in that locker room was, as far as answers, I don't know. and we got schemed up. Schemed up over and over and over again. What the Packers wanted to do today, knowing that they didn't have Jaire Alexander, Darnell Savage, they were depleted in the secondary again, was play a lot of zone, which is designed to prevent big plays. But it's also necessary that you communicate when you play zone. The first touchdown pass to Mike Evans, Eric Stokes plays like he's got help from the safety, Rudy Ford, in the middle of the field, except Rudy Ford's a one high, and he's on the opposite side of the field.
Because someone blew a coverage over there. There was a guy running, I can't remember his name, running absolutely free, and I'm watching Quay Walker and Devondre Campbell, who played two of the worst games I've ever seen of inside linebackers, and it's just like guy runs right by him. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan Owens is taking the back, and poor Rudy Ford, I don't know what he was supposed to do there.
No, and Rudy Ford didn't know either. So
that was something, too, that like they were going over it earlier, and I think it was Terry Bradshaw or somebody was pointing it out. He was like, you can see Mike Evans point before the ball's even snapped. Like, there's no safety help. And he changed his route to hit that hole.
Which takes communication to avoid. And there was breakdowns in communication, which you can't have in zone. And, boy, does that feel familiar to week one of last year? This is a really long time coming.
Yeah.
The other play. Rashad White's touchdown in the third quarter, where he ran right down vertically down the right seam. Carrington Valentine was talking after the game about how there were some looks that they hadn't seen, and that was one. They had not seen that play on film. Their scouting was that they got to crash hard on running back screens in that look. And if you watch the play, Devondre Campbell crashes really hard, takes a hard crash angle, and Rashad White runs right past him wide open down the seam. That's getting schemed up. That's how you get schemed up. So you got to be in, no matter, you know, on one hand, Joe Barry doesn't have Rasul Douglas, who had, you know, when Baker Mayfield came here 2 years ago, he had a couple of those picks. He doesn't have Rasul Douglas. He hasn't had Jaire Alexander. But it's not about the personnel on the field. It's about whether or not you are teaching your players the right thing to do and whether or not they're able to do it. And the players on the field were not able to do that today in the biggest game of the season with playoff implications hanging in the balance. There's no coming back from that. He's a dead man walking.
And to your point about something that happened like week one of last year, this game was not an anomaly. Joe Barry's seat might not have been hot 2 weeks ago, but it was warm because this was not an anomaly. This was the worst iteration of all of their problems that have persisted for the past 2 years.
Well, here's two differences in my mind from
so you'll get to say it again.
Yeah, no, don't worry about it.
From last season to this season. Like last season, there's been stretches, and even extended stretches, of quality defensive play. The last five games last year, that's what saved Joe Barry's job last year. A difference is that it's not the last five games. The quality defensive play came earlier in the season, and it leaves a much more bitter taste when your last impression is this. Down the stretch, playoff implications, and you put this on the field, it's different. The other difference, Matt LaFleur said a year ago that the offense wasn't great either. And for long, you know, the first half of the season, the offense was the problem, not the defense. But now you have an ascending offense, and Jordan Love looks every bit like a franchise quarterback that you need to build around. And you have a descending defense. And that's a big difference from last year, too, when the offense was not ascending and the defense was. So to me, those two things are what makes this a different situation.
Spoon.
The most damning part is that, all right, the Packers had a short week, so they only practiced once. You know, they had walkthroughs. So what do you do? You know, that's a challenge, okay? Then he had, you know, Walker coming back, and Savage was out. They were working Stokes back in. So there was a little bit of roughness. And then you look on the other side, and Todd Bowles has no idea whether he's going to have Vita Vea. He's probably not going to have Carlton Davis. He's probably not going to have Ryan Neal. On the day of the game, he decides he's not going to let Devin White play because the guy apparently – I was just reading between the lines that he was like something about his foot. He was like, well, I don't know if I can play or I can't. And he's like, all right, you're done. You know, so he had all these guys, all these question marks, and they played very good defense. I mean, very solid. The Packers got them on some things, but that's what you do. You know, a really good coach can handle those situations. And Barry either got too complicated or relied on stuff they hadn't worked on enough. I don't know. I'd be curious what the players said, but for whatever reason, they were just not together on it, you know? And one other thing, if someone's playing poorly, take them out of the game.
Yeah.
You know, Devondre Campbell, how did he miss that little stick route to David Moore?
That turned into the 52-yard touchdown.
How did he miss that?
Yeah.
You know, if a guy's playing like crap, take him out of the game. I don't care if he's a veteran.
He seemed lost all day today.
Yeah. And he has been most of the season. Yeah.
There's a couple of other actual player parts of the defense I want to get into, but let's one more thing on Barry. Pete made the point after the game, you know, look at the Packers' last offensive drive. They rushed, Bucks rushed how many? Six? Seven?
Right. Yeah.
And they sacked Love and caused a fumble. And when you've got Baker Mayfield who likes to get antsy and scramble, but he's still a small guy. I mean, they sacked him five times. When there were moments where you had to have a stop, especially on third, I mean, what were they on third down? What were the Bucks on third down?
6 of 12 or 6 of 13, something like that.
Yeah, that's a 6 of 12, yeah. Do you think that there have just been times earlier in the year where they were able to get home with 4, even 3 at times, and so he just – it seemed like Barry was unwilling to do more than that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's worked before, so it'll work again today. Clearly, it's not.
Send 5 and get a one. I mean, Kenny Clark was killing whoever he was anytime he got a one-on-one. So Wyatt was too. So create a one-on-one in those situations and rush. But he played scared. Mm-hmm. He just played scared. And thinking, okay, well, we sacked him 5 times, you know, with a 4-man rush. We'll just rely on that. Well, don't get aggressive. You know, it was 2nd and 29 when they gave up that 24-yard completion. Same thing happened in the Giants game, only they were playing man. So get after the quarterback. That's the bottom line.
You know, 5 sacks sounds like enough when, I mean, that's a lot of sacks, right? But it's not enough when it's your only pass defense.
Yeah.
They had 5 sacks. And Baker Mayfield had 6 incompletions.
Yeah.
If they didn't want an incompletion, if they wanted an incompletion, a failed, an unsuccessful pass play, they had to sack Baker Mayfield, or it wasn't going to happen. And not only was it going to be a completion, Baker Mayfield had 381 yards and 28 passes. That's 13.6 yards per pass.
Mm-hmm.
As Matt LaFleur said, that's getting gashed. And Matt LaFleur's only said that about the run defense this year because they've given up 200 rushing yards in 4 games. We've heard that word over and over from Matt LaFleur. Gash, gash, gash. We hadn't heard it from the pass defense yet. But 13.6 yards per pass and only 6 incompletions. Yeah, when your only pass defense is sacking the guy, mm-hmm. you got to do everything you can to sack the guy because you can't cover anything.
And, you know, Rashawn Gary made the point afterwards, too. The past 2 years – because there, obviously the comparisons are going to come up. Baker the past 2 years versus this year. And he kind of said, you know, Baker's always been that guy. He's been that field general. But in the past, there's been mistakes. And there have been. Yeah, I think especially to that Christmas game 2 years ago, he threw 2 costly interceptions. There's always been those. He's always inevitably made a mistake. And today, they didn't force him into any mistakes. Mm-hmm. And they were mistakes that the Packers baited him into. And that was not the case today. We talked a lot about miscommunication on the defense. Spoon, what did we say over and over when Jonathan Owens and Anthony Johnson Jr. were on the field together?
Yeah.
Yep.
And then who were the safeties today?
Yeah, although I'm not going to blame Rudy Ford for what happened today because I thought, I don't know if you saw on that last play, on the Moore play, he's absolutely screaming at Jonathan Owens.
Before the snap, he was
get
jumping
back.
Up
he's yeah. telling him, get back, you know, mm-hmm. get back. And, you know, Owens is, I asked LaFleur about it, and Owens said, and he said Owens was disguising his play. Now, I don't know if Owens would have been a factor in that play, but that would have been one more guy deep mm-hmm. who might have cut that guy off. Mm-hmm. But that's just an example of what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the deal here that, you know, a guy is screaming across the field and telling him to get back and mm-hmm. and they're not communicating. And he's just kind of looking at him like, don't worry about it.
Or it was blatantly
whatever.
Obvious, too, because he's like jumping up and down trying to get his attention.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's stuff like that. It's like the little tight end play, the 2-yard touchdown.
The little leak out.
Yeah. It's like, who was supposed to be covering that? You know, I don't think that was like a big play action thing that someone was supposed to be biting. Someone needs to cover that guy. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. There was just so much bad stuff. There was bad play too. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. I mean, you know, the linebackers, Quay Walker maybe shouldn't have even been out there because he couldn't raise his arm. You know, there are a couple times he looked like he was in position to make a play and he couldn't get his arm out to knock it down. Why didn't you play McDuffie some then? Mm-hmm. You know, give him at least part of the time, you know. I don't understand that. Why not play Anthony Johnson if one of the other guys is not playing very well?
You know, when I talked to Keyshawn Nixon for 1 minute, and I'm not sure if anyone else did because he was walking out the door. But one of the things that he said, and he said a lot in that 1 minute, but one of the things he said is the coaches, they schemed us up. I don't feel like we played bad as a secondary. They're in the NFL, too.
He said that last week after the Giants, too.
It's a pretty damning statement. It, you know, they schemed us up, the coaches. And to your point, the secondary, they looked lost. They didn't look like they didn't know what to do. And that's different than playing bad. I mean, it's not production, but it's different than playing bad. They got schemed up.
That's interesting that's how he worded it, because that's almost word for word what he said about the 32-yarder to Wandale Robinson in the Giants game that put them in field goal position. He said, we run that look a lot, and they knew exactly what to do with it. They're in the NFL, too, which makes me I now that he has said it 2 weeks in a row, yeah, it does make me think.
Doesn't excuse him for playing it fundamentally horrible.
No.
You know, but, yeah, you know, I often, Baker Mayfield after the game, now sometimes quarterbacks just say this, but he's like, we didn't do anything special. He said we just mm-hmm. played better than we normally do. And, you know, he said he said they didn't do anything out of their scheme. Maybe he's lying, maybe he's not. But if they didn't, that's even worse, you know?
It doesn't. I can't. I mean, you never really know watching it live, but I can't think of anything they did that, like, not even with, like, pre-snap motion or anything that seemed weird or different. It all looked pretty cut and dry, but it was just guys getting open and finding holes in the defense more often than not.
Yeah, they found ways to take advantage of what personnel groups the Packers were in. So they had two linebackers in the game a lot of times, and they always found a way to get one of those linebackers having to cover a receiver mm-hmm. or a tight end. And they did a lot of bunch, you know, stuff. Mm-hmm. They just seemed to be one step ahead.
Well, I think a lot of it, again, was just the inability to communicate in zone. You know, and that's how you make Baker Mayfield look like he's Tom Brady. Because any NFL quarterback, and Baker Mayfield's an NFL quarterback, he's not a good one, but he's an NFL quarterback. When you present an NFL quarterback with layups, snap after snap after snap, it's an easy day. That's how you wind up with Baker Mayfield at 158.3 passer rating, because he was looking at layups all four quarters because they weren't communicating in the zone.
Well, and they're not threatening him at the line of scrimmage. They're not making him think about who's coming, who isn't coming. They didn't present a lot of, distraction to him, I thought.
Mm-hmm. How much longer do you – let's just place our bets here. How much longer do you think Joe Barry is the defensive coordinator of the Green Bay Packers?
I mean, to me – if I were LaFleur, I'd do it right away. But knowing him, I think he's going to wait till the end of the year.
Yeah. Mm. I'd.
The end of the season or the end of 2023 here?
No, the end of the season.
I tend to agree. You know, I just don't know how they come back from this defensively. The confusion. You can't have confusion on that side of the ball.
It could change if they have one of those. I'm going to call it the Brandon Staley game. You know, the 63-24 type of game.
And I don't know. I could see it happening sooner because LaFleur is told to do it.
Nobody's going to tell him to do it.
Like, could Goody tell him
to do it? He can't. That's not his purview.
Okay, that's interesting. What's the hierarchy there?
The coach has complete control over his staff. And then, of course, Mark Murphy has control over LaFleur.
Can Mark Murphy tell him to
do it? He could, but he won't. He wouldn't do that.
Why not?
He's not that kind of guy. Okay. He's just not. He doesn't want to interfere.
Well, it happens, wish you all the best, Joe Barry. Best paying job in America is an out-of-work football coach. So enjoy your next few months.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for him. He's
always been great with the media.
Yeah, he it's not like he's a guy who just doesn't put in the work or anything, from what I can tell. But he's just been overmatched.
And I think it just comes down to getting scared. His game plan looks scared more often than not. And that's damning. You can't be scared in the NFL.
Yeah, and we also, the part we don't know, too, is what's LaFleur's role been in this? What has he asked of Barry? You know, LaFleur has to take some blame, I'm sure, too, because he approves all the defensive game plans.
Okay. You could argue in a way that Brian Gutekunst has to take some blame for drafting for trading Rasul Douglas for a third round pick. Now that's I think it was a good move, and that's nothing against Rasul Douglas. Getting a third round pick and saving some cap space for an ascending team, all eyes on 2024. That's a good move, but it doesn't make the defense better. It just doesn't.
I have to wonder, though, if when that trade happened, Brian Gutekunst thought that Jair Alexander would be on the field a lot quicker.
Yeah,
I think what else he thought was that they weren't going to be in this position in 2023. That's a move you don't make if you think that, okay, we got a shot here at making the playoffs. And so I think that obviously factored into it, but they're not a better defense in 2023 for not having Rasul Douglas.
Yeah, I don't know, but do you think Rasul Douglas would have made a difference, that much of a difference? I mean, he'd have been playing for Corey Ballantyne.
Right.
And Ballantyne's not been awful. It's not like he's gotten beat for touchdown after touchdown. I just don't know if the way he was playing, if it would have been that big of an impact. Right.
Maybe not night and day. I think they'd be a better defense with Rasul Douglas and Corey Ballantyne.
Yeah, probably.
But I don't know how much better. I'm just saying, you know, things that might be stacked against Joe Barry, there's some things you can point at, but at the end of the day, when your defense is in mass confusion, it can't cover zone, it can't cover anybody, and you're the coordinator, and this is what you put out there in a huge game, and it's, as you said, Cassidy, a long history here, there's no coming back from that.
It's an interesting debate. I don't know if he would have made all the difference in the world, but it's one factor into it.
Alexander would have made a difference if he were there.
Absolutely.
I mean, you could have put him on Godwin and Stokes on Evans, and you might have played the game differently. You could have played more man defense and blitzed a little more. But at some point, you got to also take some chances, and I don't think that's what Joe Barry did.
Mm. As we have alluded to, offense didn't have a great day, but they had a decent day. This should be an offensive day that would win a game. It might have been ugly, but it would have won it. Jordan Love finished 29 of 39, 284 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. He was sacked twice, including the sack on the 4th and 10. That was time of death on this game.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he got sacked, he fumbled it. Bucks recovered the fumble. At that point, and this is very rare to say about Jordan Love, and I don't think this is not indicative of it being a bad thing, he just looked like he was done with this game. And I don't know if I could blame him. When your defense is playing like that, he just was like, the way he got up off the ground after that sack, he just looked done with this game. And
yeah, I can't
get that feeling.
Can't blame him. There are a lot of, you know, banged up offensive guys who were probably like, glad this thing's over with. Right. You know, Jaden Reed was probably like, I can't.
Yeah.
I saw him after the game, and he's got one shoe on and he's walking mm-hmm. through the locker room. So, you know, I'm sure he wasn't feeling great.
Yeah. And we can kind of get into a couple of bright spots with Wicks and Kraft, but are we really, really starting to see the effects now of this offense not having Christian Watson?
Yeah, I think we have the last two games. I think mm-hmm. so. I think that could have made a difference. I don't know if it would have made a difference in them winning, but they're not finishing mm-hmm. enough in the red zone. You know, the fourth and two, I didn't think that was a good series anyway when they got down there. It didn't matter because they wound up getting the ball after that, you know, down at what? Wasn't that when they were down at the 10-yard line, they got the ball back?
Yeah.
But, you know, you gotta put some pressure. And part of what Tampa did to Jordan Love was keep scoring. And then they mm-hmm. put a ton of pressure on you to get the ball down the field and score. Every time we saw the Packers do well this year, they were in the lead.
Yeah.
You know, they forced the other team to get a little antsy. And I think not having Watson has affected them in that regard.
Well, the thing with this offense is, you know, we talk about the things that have gone against Joe Barry. This offense was the side of the ball that entered this week with something of an excuse card, right? I mean, they don't have their backup tailback. Their top running back is just returning from a three-game absence because of an MCL. They don't have their top receiver. Their top tight end has a lacerated kidney. And two really promising rookies in Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks have ankle injuries. And yet it was the offense. And so, yeah, the defense didn't have Jaire Alexander. The offense has all that. And it was the offense that put forth a credible performance, a performance they could have won with. And, you know, Dontavian Wicks, bum ankle. He leads the way with 97 yards. Jaden Reed, dropped from the injury report Friday, still a bum ankle. And he makes the touchdown catch, a really savvy play in the back right corner of the end zone. These guys were overcoming what wasn't perfect, what was wrong, mm-hmm. and making plays that could win games. That's what the defense didn't do. So that to me was a big difference in the two sides.
Yeah, Kraft almost lost his manhood.
He sure did.
You know, so
that's that guy's a whirling dervish.
When did Jaden Reed have a bum ankle?
Last week he injured his ankle. He was on the injury report.
Oh, see, I just
and then they took
him
off
concussion protocol the whole time. So
they took him off concussion protocol right away, like Tuesday, I think. Yeah. And then they put him on. They kept him on the injury report with the ankle.
And then he also took a shot, I think, like in the ribs or something during the game, and then he hurt his toe at some point.
He was banged up.
Yeah.
Dontavian Wicks, the six receptions for 97 yards, he averaged 16.2 yards per reception. He had a couple of third down conversions that were huge. They were like 21 and 22 respectively, I think.
Yeah, he had some serious yak.
Yeah, he did. And he talked about
yak.
Yak. I was very proud of my Tucker Kraft tweet when he hurdled a guy. He said, Kraft, yak, and cheese.
That is pretty good.
That is
pretty good.
He talked about that.
I would
too.
Say that you're going to be here all week, but you're not.
Taylor Swift should write a song with that title.
You'll get
just
me
for you.
For 12 more hours. All these lines. So Tucker Kraft talked about that play. He said, usually a DB goes low when you're on the sideline. So he was like, I was figured I'd go over him and try to get 2 to 3 more yards.
Yeah.
And he said, but he didn't go low. He hit me in an area. And he looked like he was about to yak on the sideline.
2 yards are not worth two.
No.
But then he went back in two plays later.
I know, but don't take that chance.
No.
Remember that kid, Colt Lyria, who did
Lyria.
That?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did that here too. And I don't know if he can have kids at this
point. That was not good.
It felt like Tucker Kraft was like, what did they say? What do they always say on Twitter? Aircraft. He went airborne a couple of times today because he somersaulted into the end zone for his touchdown, too. But Dontavian Wicks, specifically, his yards after catch, one, they needed it because they don't have Christian Watson to take the top off, so they had to get an explosive play somehow. He's 6'1", 206. And I think that's a media guide, 6'1", 206. I wouldn't be surprised if he's like 196, 195.
Got a little bit of heft to him. I'd like to go back and look at his combine. I'll bet you he's 206.
Okay.
I bet you he is.
He just seems very lithe to me.
Strong.
Point is, he drags guys. And I asked him about it today, like, you know, because you're not the biggest receiver necessarily in here, does it ever surprise some of these defenders when you're dragging like two or three of them at a time? And he said, yeah, I think it kind of shocks them. He said, because, you know, there's some pretty big DBs in the NFL. And he said, but when we're on the field, you're going to have to prove you're tougher than me. And I was like, Spoon's going to love that line because this is his guy.
He keeps his legs churning.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't stop. And he's almost like got the crazy legs, you know, where he's just kind of pushing, you know, squirming, whatever he's got to do. So pretty impressive game for him.
I think I would say long term, three best receivers on this roster very well might be Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks.
I think, you know, I'd agree with that.
And Romeo Doubs is a good guy to have. I'm not knocking Romeo Doubs, but he's been
really quiet lately.
Those three guys got a lot of juice. And yeah, I think for the offense, if you go back to the original point of this season, which was to figure things out on that side of the ball, there's a lot of good there. There's a lot of good there pointing to 2024. There's reasons to believe that Jordan Love's a franchise quarterback. You got to build around him. He's surrounded by a lot of really young talent. Now, when they get, and we talked about it last week, but when they get Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave back, watch out, because they got two really young, dynamic, promising tight ends. The problem is that this season stopped being about 2024 when they beat the Chiefs. And since then, all they've done is lose two games that certainly the New York game they should have won. This one with any kind of credible defense, they could have won. And this season stopped being about 2024 2 weeks ago. And since then, they haven't won. So, you know, they've got a lot to figure out on the other side of the ball. But offensively, there's a lot of potential there.
Did you see how many times Tommy DeVito got sacked today?
I didn't see the number, but I heard it was a lot.
Seven.
Oh,
seven?
My goodness.
And they sacked him how many times last week? None.
Zero.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Who were they playing?
New Orleans.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
They lost 24-6.
You know, Tucker Kraft had a quote after the game, and he was talking about offense, like the offense, you know, after they stopped starting slow and started starting fast, he was like, you know, we still kind of beat ourselves with either, like, special teams penalties or offensive penalties or you just selfish penalties. And he said, I firmly believe the only people that can beat the Packers are the Packers. And I shared that on social media, and all these people immediately responded with, well, Joe Barry is paid by the Packers. So he's right about that.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm trying to think if there's anything else from this game that we haven't touched on. The Jaden Reed touchdown, the more you go back and watch that, that was a heck of a catch by Reed. That was a heck of a throw by Love.
Oh, that was a good throw.
To do that on the scramble, the accuracy behind that throw – because he had one spot he could get it. And to have and that was a long throw, too. So
that whole drive, though. That whole drive, he put that offense on his back. He wasn't getting a lot of protection. And he was just making plays. He was really good today.
Yeah, I thought he was. You know, a couple times I think he'll get better in leading guys and figuring out where guys are. But then I was watching – you know, so like there was a Kraft play down the left sideline and Kraft had to kind of turn. He was wide open and he had to turn for it. Do you remember that play?
Yeah.
And then I'm watching a highlight and I think it was Christian McCaffrey's running down. I mean, nobody near him. And Brock Purdy puts it somewhere where Christian McCaffrey had to fall down to get it. And then he got up and ran for the touchdown.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you know, people are like, oh, he can't put it right on the numbers. It's a game of pressure and getting rid of the ball and being on the same page with your guys. I just don't think it's always pretty.
I don't think anybody puts it on the numbers every time.
No.
Tom Brady maybe did, you know.
Here's the thing, too. I've got to think, you know, we're seeing a lot less throws in terms of accuracy negatively influenced Yak than we were early in the season. And when it comes to, as you said, long-term getting better at leading guys, so much of that is knowing the guy. And on this young of an offense, you've seen it get better because they're playing together more. Early in the season, they'd never played together. You talk all you want about off-season workouts in Southern California. That's not September, October, November in the NFL. It's not the same thing. They have to actually play together. And the more you play together, the more you learn your guy, how he moves, the little intricacies of his routes, because everybody runs the route individually. It's close to what's on paper, but it's never the same. The more you learn that, the better you're going to get as a quarterback of leading that specific guy. You've seen it get better. I got to think it's going to get better as they play more together.
Yeah, and that one that Jaden Reed drew a pass interference call, that was a great pass. Great and throw. he had a corner blitzing him right in his face. Mm-hmm. And he made that move quickly, said, oh, here he comes, and he threw it up there. That's the kind of stuff he's got to do a lot.
Not only did he have a corner in his face, he had Antoine Winfield in his face, and he knocked him down as he threw it.
Did he?
Yeah, and then it was kind of funny because they got up and they were walking down to where the ball was in the new line of scrimmage, and like they turned to each other as they were walking out of the end zone and like just reached over and gave a fist bump.
Oh,
like,
really?
Good play, man. Good play.
I thought it was as good of a deep ball throw as Jordan Love's made all season.
Yeah, it was.
And I thought it at the time, like, because he put it out there. He let Reed go get it, and then he ultimately put it on him, but it's because he put it out there and let him go get it, which how many times we talked about him not doing that this season, but he did it while getting hit. That was a really big, even if it was, Reed didn't catch the ball, it was a DPI, maybe a questionable DPI. That was a big moment for him.
Hmm. One last little thing, because I'm just curious y'all's opinion. The third down attempt by Jones, or maybe it was second down. Now I'm blanking. Where he tried to reach out, and then they said it wasn't a first down, and then LaFleur challenged it, and they upheld it. Did y'all think it was a first down?
I did not. But I only saw the replay quickly. I thought his elbow went down when the ball was short of the first
maybe
down.
Maybe I didn't see that angle with the elbow.
I didn't know. But I thought it was way too close to challenge when you're trailing and you might need that timeout.
Yeah.
Take your third and one.
Yes, right.
And they ended up converting the next play.
You know what I wonder?
Love shove.
I wonder how much, and I don't know, but I just wonder how much of him challenging was how adamant his guy was about getting there.
Yeah, you can't listen to your guys.
I know, right?
It's like when in the NBA where those guys are all circling their finger, and it's like half the time they fouled or they did something wrong.
It's like, when you took a tech for Giannis so that he didn't, kind of protecting your guy, right? Like, oh, okay, Aaron Jones, that's my guy. He's fervently believing that he was there. I gotta back him up here as a coach on the sideline. I gotta throw that challenge flag. No, every single player thinks they always have the first down. Yeah.
So you're saying Connor Lewis wouldn't have called for that one? Y'all think that was all LaFleur?
I don't know. That's a good question, but I'm a little surprised that Connor Lewis he's usually pretty right that he would have gotten that wrong. LaFleur sometimes does make that decision, emotionally.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think that was a Lewis call because in fact, now that
can I can ask tomorrow.
Exactly. Y'all can.
Well, you can't, but we can.
On that note, anything else from this game?
I don't know. Special teams.
I'll tell you what. Keyshawn Nixon showed some patience as a kick returner today. He
bobbled a ball.
Was 1 yard deep on the opening or on the first kickoff, and he watched it go over his head. The next kickoff, he actually let a ball dribble through the end zone after falling on the other side of the goal line.
What's gotten into that guy?
I don't know. I know it was Keyshawn Nixon because he was wearing 25, and I spoke with him after the game.
Mm-hmm.
But he looked like a different guy. There was patience there.
Boy, could they use his impact from last year? They haven't gotten that at all this year. Just not been there.
And then there was that weird punt that Jaden Reed let fly, which took a Bucs bounce. I don't know if he.
Oh, my God, was that a great punt.
Yeah, and he backpedaled 20 yards for it.
Yeah. No, you got to let that go inside the five, and it bounced, hit the five, and then.
It made sense to let it bounce, and I thought it was going to roll through, but then it took that Bucs bounce. And
he played it perfect. I said at the time, guy kicks a 65-yard punt and kills it inside the five, you just tip your cap.
You tip your cap.
Exactly.
What are you going to do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here we go, Cassidy.
There was nothing Reed did wrong there. That I wasn't saying that. It was just a weird punt.
Yeah.
It's a weird bounce.
Not going to let you get out the door without making your prediction here. Where's the season end, Cassidy?
Oh, good question.
The more I see of the Bears, the more I think they could lose that game.
Yep.
The thing that works in their favor is that it's at home, I think. But even then, I don't know. I don't know how much of a difference that makes.
Pressure.
It's going to feel a lot like last season.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they ended at 8-9 last season. They could definitely end at 8-9 again. Because they're, 6-8 right now?
I think they could be 6-11. Honestly, I do. Yeah. I think they could lose to Carolina.
Or they could be 9-8.
Yeah.
I don't know. They could be 9-8 or 6-11.
What's crazy though is with this NFC is top heavy, and so because of what it looks like in the middle of the pack, they could get into the playoffs at 9-8. Pretty easily.
But winning all three, I think that's going to be a tall chore.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to make this pick right now.
So no, we do not.
This is all on Cassidy.
Oh, that's right.
It's all on you.
Right. You asked her.
What do you got, Cassidy?
We said they'd go 3-2 over these last five games, right? Well, they've lost two.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just think they have another loss in them. I don't know which
Minnesota.
One.
And that's not.
I don't know. Is Nick Mullins going to come out and out-duel even this defense?
Baker Mayfield had a perfect passer rating.
But
today,
your point, Baker Mayfield's been a number one overall pick before.
That was a lifetime
Nick
ago.
Nick Mullins had the Vikings up by 14 against Cincinnati on the road. And, playing at Minnesota is not
easy.
We'll
just cast doubt on Cassidy here. What do you got, Cassidy?
I think they finished 8-9. That may get them into the playoffs, too.
That was my prediction before the season. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I think they're at 8-9, but I don't know where the loss is. It could be any three of them.
Yeah. Or all three. Or none of the three. 8-9. Okay.
So, we'll see. Well, guys, anything else? I think we're done. I'll give you your final 60 seconds.
60 seconds, huh?
Hmm.
Well, you know what? I don't really have anything. I kind of said goodbye to you on the last.
I know, you're like, why are you still here?
I know.
You don't have to use your 60 seconds for me. Use it for anything. What's your favorite Christmas Hanukkah memory?
I'm going to talk football.
Okay.
I think they struggle to win 2 of 3. I think they maybe win 1 of 3 to finish. And I'll predict that I don't think he'll fire Barry because I don't think he has any options for calling plays until the end of the year.
In season. You don't think
he'll in season. Correct.
That's very
correct.
Important.
No. For sure he will do it otherwise.
How do you call a game if you're Joe Barry? Are you just calling for your next job?
Well, you got some professional pride.
Yeah,
I guess if I knew I was getting fired next week, I knew it.
Yeah.
I'd be writing some crap.
Right, exactly. I'd just be letting it put Madden on autoplay mode.
Yeah, I'd be doing some AI stuff, right? Getting out by 10 a.m. in the morning. I guess it's just professional pride. Mm-hmm.
I just really like to know how that conversation went tonight between Matt LaFleur and Joe Barry. I'd be a fly on the wall
there.
Joe Barry
was smart. He was in his car before Matt LaFleur.
Yes,
had done
Matt LaFleur, I bet you, locked himself in his office. Yeah. He doesn't want to talk to anybody.
Matt LaFleur was asked, as he should have been, about Joe Barry. And I understand his answer. It's a totally fair answer. Not the time. Because he's just walking off the field. I get it. You need to decompress. But there's a hard conversation that was had. You got to think it was had. Boy, to be a fly on the wall there. It just... But you know what, Spoon? I think... you said that Matt LaFleur, this is on him. He's the head coach. He's got nobody to blame for himself. There's a lot of truth there.
I don't think Joe Barry's going to leave or make it that tough on LaFleur. When Mike Patton left, there was some bad blood there, especially over how that NFC Championship game went. And I'll bet you they haven't talked since then. But with Joe Barry, I mean, he gave him his last chance to be a defensive coordinator, mm-hmm. and stuck with him. And really, you know, Barry should be thankful mm-hmm. through all that. And I just, he's not that type of, I haven't seen any sign of him being that type of guy that would be vindictive or
worth emphasizing. Joe Barry, win, lose, get annihilated by Baker Mayfield, has always been a very pleasant guy to deal with. Mm-hmm. He has been upstanding. Just last week, I actually figured, so Joe Barry comes in and he points to me. He's like, "Where were you last week?" And actually, I was like, "I don't know. It was a week ago. I can't remember." I actually remember where I was. It was a Friday instead of the Thursday because of the Monday night game. Mm-hmm. I had to go pick up my kids from school because I pick them up from school on Friday. So I wasn't there. I was like, I'm so confused. I mean, he remembered that, right? And the last thing I said as he walked out off the podium was, "I'll see you next week." And now that might not be the case. We'll see. But he was always very pleasant. It always has been very pleasant to deal with. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot. That's not hard to see.
I'll never forget the story about when Billy Donovan was fired by the Thunder. And he went in the day after a game where he knew he was going to get fired. And went to the owner's office. And he said that he walked in, sat down. They both poured a glass of bourbon and just talked about their favorite memories from while he was there. Never had the "you're fired" discussion.
Mm,
just discussed their favorite memories. He walked out. Then the owner called the agent and dealt with the details of the firing.
Wow. I will say I saw Joe Barry go to the elevator from the coach's box, mm-hmm. and I've never – he was like stunned isn't quite the word, but I've never seen him like not even look anybody in the eye.
Mm.
He just – he was just really, you could tell he was in a different world thinking mm-hmm. about what had just happened.
And that's amazing because it was Thanksgiving when I've never seen Joe Barry in a happier mood.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
I mean, after the game, Jovial doesn't give it credit. I mean, I've never seen like a happier guy with the way his defense played, which was phenomenal. I mean, they took it to a really good Detroit Lions offense. They won the game. Jordan Love was great, but they won the game on the backs of that defense. That defense scored a touchdown. Never seen a happier guy, and that was 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
It changes fast in the NFL.
Not for long. NFL, not for long. Well, guys, it's been a pleasure for the most part. And
so maybe we'll let you be a guest on the podcast next week.
Thanks. Bring in a guest. I can do the opposing beat reporter.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
Except
you probably don't know very much about the team.
So apparently the Panthers do like a Know Your Enemy article too, but they write it themselves.
Oh.
And he texted me and he was like, "This is going to be before you actually get here and start, but I need you to go ahead and write this article." Anyways, it's been a pleasure as always. Spoon, I'll see you this weekend.
Yes.
And well, I would say until next time, but they'll see you next time. So until then, this has been the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.